This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 6th of June, 2023. And just before I came in here, actually, we have this news crossing the wires of a Ukrainian dam, apparently the one connected to a hydroelectric power plant that powers and provides water for much of Crimea, was blown by the Russian side. That's the accusation from the Ukrainians. Clearly something going on here in terms of disrupting Ukraine's supposed offensive that's going on. But one concern we have, and you know, something that we don't want to be panic-mongering here, but something that could have wider implications, is that it is the reservoir that was behind this dam that's used for cooling the Zaporizhia power plant, Europe's largest nuclear power plant. So just something to track, obviously, ongoing basis. But I guess otherwise, headlines, we had an attempt by the market to extend a bit higher yesterday to new highs for the cycle. A weak ISM services data point, 50.3, and there's some indications that survey is really showing a bit of contraction, even as below something like 52 or 53. But that's 50.3 was worse than expected. Prices paid at 56.2, dropping there. Still rising prices, but at a slower pace. And the employment index was at 49.2. So pretty much suggesting a stagnating U.S. services economy, if we're to believe this survey, rather than the S&P Global one, which has sort of mid-50s and suggesting a reasonable pace of expansion. This had that yield move from Friday, tempered somewhat, but just not a lot of market volatility here. But just taking stock, Peter, when I look at the year to date, which is what I actually put in that Saxo equity theme performance overview on slide two, and I put in the one sorted on year to date. It's been a pretty solid year, to say the least. Of course, we did start the year at sort of some local lows, especially in the NASDAQ, but we're up something like 30%+ on the NASDAQ 100. You can see some of the baskets that are performing so well. It just seems like an aggressive move here. What's your perspective on year-to-date performance and as you look at this market in general?
Yeah, well, technically, the market is very strong. But as we've pointed out in several of our equity notes recently, you know, key risk in the market is this hype in AI-related stocks. It's been a very narrow set of circumstances that have been driving this market high. I mean, if you take a NASDAQ 100 and you compare the performance, removing the six largest companies with that group of six stocks, the divergence inside that index is just spectacular. And you'll see the same inside the S&P 500. And that's the reason why on your sorted list there, John, that you have the mega caps up there, and there are, you know, used an equity note headline the other day, like it feels like an echo from the past, and I think there's a lot of similarities. Although I do think that the AI technology that we're seeing this time around is far more potent, will have far more reaching and positive implications for the world compared to what we have been promised from self-driving cars and blockchain and crypto, etc., over the years, and a lot of these things might eventually come to fruition at one point, but we have seen these bubbles and hype before. I have a feeling that, you know, social media platforms are amplifying these hype cycles more than we have ever seen before. And also with the return in terms of numbers of people, retail investors participating in the market, I think that is also adding to this volatility. And you can see the bubble stocks and semiconductors. There's very a tight correlation there. So it is spreading away from the AI stocks into other corners of the equity market. And I think it's obviously something to be worried about. Because if you're a long-term investor, that's not your key concern. Your key concern there, of course, is the recession risk and the macroeconomy and policy rates.
Yes, and as well, one risk we have to look forward to here, we've talked jawboned endlessly about that, is the Treasury issuance deal, or the Treasury issuance pace that is upcoming here now that the debt ceiling deal has been made. We'll have Althea on to talk about the specifics of that, but maybe a bit ironic that we sort of celebrated the passing of the debt ceiling lifting with a risk-on rally, because ironically it sets loose this issue that could pinch liquidity across the board. But we'll have to wait and see on the impact of that across markets, and in particular the U.S. dollar, which has been pretty back and forth. There's no real broad conclusion you can draw here. But one currency that moved a lot overnight was the Australian dollar, the second meeting in a row where the RBA surprises on the hawkish side with a 25 basis point hike, taking the rate to 4.1%. A lot of discussion that they're concerned about wages, especially public wages, with the larger than expected adjustment there. It was also been noted that housing prices are on the rebound despite the higher rates. So the RBA felt it had room to move again and indicated basically that it could continue tightening from here, even though it believes that inflation has peaked for the cycle. Very interesting technical setup here for Aussie versus the U.S. dollar, as I put there on slide three. Sort of at the last gasp area for the bears to make a stand there, a 61.8% retracement of the entire sell-off, plus that coincides approximately with the 200-day moving average. So that's the area. If we're crossing above there, I would like to see some broader weakness in the dollar to argue that Aussie dollar has fully reversed. But that would cement the deal if it can rally also through this resistance zone. Otherwise, I would just note on the FX board the relative strength or weakness across the G10 plus renminbi, that the renminbi itself, the CNH at least, is quite weak here. Pretty ugly stuff. There's so many question marks around the quality of the Chinese reopening and recovery. And then oil in your space, we had a weekend development, of course, with an OPEC Plus meeting. So take us through what happened there. Looks like, gap up to incorporate the production cut announcement, but then we just close the gap. It's really amazing that we didn't, or maybe some of it was priced in ahead of the fact, the rally that was going into this weekend as well.
Yeah, I think we probably have to see the price action in the 3 days that led up to the meeting. There was some short covering already coming into the market. We saw that in the cut data as well up until last Tuesday. There was quite a significant amount of shorts being reduced in the Brent market, and that set the stage for that announcement. And I think just once again, I just simply don't understand why they make these big announcements on a weekend where the market is closed. It doesn't really give anyone the right opportunity, because the longs, they get into high levels, shorts, they are squeezed out, and then with the market failure to follow through, then the recent established longs get out once again, and then the result is we're back to a lower level than from before the meeting. And it was a meeting that on paper was moderately bullish. Saudi Arabia made a unilateral decision to cut production by 1 million barrels from July. That's obviously a couple of months away. It's next month, so we're already into June. Time is flying. But it does send a signal that they want to support the market, but they also want the other players to play ball, i.e. Russia. They want to see a firm, solid indication that they are actually cutting as they promised by the 500,000 barrels. And that will, I think that could be quite an interesting one to follow. At the same time, the African nation got steamrolled by the Middle East. Nigeria, Angola and Congo all forced to accept lower production quotas for next year. That is an interesting situation if Nigeria does manage to increase its production over the coming months, because the ratio that the quotas they're getting is basically more or less in line with what they're producing right now. So that potentially also is another area of contention in the coming months. But overall, the market needs a firmer view on demand, and right now that is really the key driver. It doesn't really matter how much you cut production if the market's worried about even worse times ahead. So as long as we have the recession risks in Europe and the US, as long as China is not moving along on cylinders as the market had hoped for, then the outlook is still one where we probably should see prices traded in the 70s. I think the biggest takeaway is probably that OPEC is prepared to defend the price. So there's probably a flaw in the market, but the expectation for 80 plus or 90 plus, that will not happen anytime soon.
All right. And then on the, we need to look over at the agricultural space, because at least for us here in Northern Europe and Denmark specifically, I mean, it is absolutely creepy. It feels like we live in Southern California, just day after day after day. Sun, no rain. There has been rain for really the last 6 weeks or so here. Things are drying out. And that's the case elsewhere, not just in Europe, but elsewhere in the world. I'm a bit surprised how little it's affected the market. But what's the next step here for crops?
The thing is, the market has been focusing on the availability of supply right now, and that has been good. We've had a record production in Russia. They've been dumping wheat into the global market. That has been putting Chicago wheat under pressure, because they couldn't compete with cheap wheat from Russia. Australia's crop this year was good. They are the main exporters to China and some of the Asian countries. But we had news in the last couple of days here that Australia is now seeing that the new crop output could drop by 1/3. They're really worried about this La Nina starting to have an impact over the coming months.
El Nino,
exactly. Sorry, right.
La Nina was one the exactly. weird one we had for 3 years. Yeah,
exactly. El Nino, and it's not even started to have a proper impact, but they're already now worried that crop could drop by 1/3, and that basically means China, a major importer of wheat, will have to look elsewhere, and that will just raise competition on the global market. So I think we really need to watch out for these crop prices in the coming weeks, because it's a very very tricky time, because it's now that the crop needs the water in order to lead to a robust production later this year. So we need to watch very closely. Conditions in the US so far is also deteriorating. Corn conditions is deteriorated quite fast, rapidly last week. We can see that on the insert there on slide 4. Spring wheat conditions just only started to be reported last week, and we started at 64% rated good to excellent. And if that starts to head south, then we should be somewhat worried.
All right. Now, turning back to the equity market, Peter, one of the most interesting, probably the most interesting stock to watch yesterday was Apple and the announcement of this Vision Pro so-called mixed reality headset, $3,500 for one of these things. But also technically it was very interesting because we saw Apple just touching the all-time highs and then reversing kind of an ugly candle, at least for a single session. Disney was interviewed. I think they're planning on providing some content about it. Won't it be fun to have Mickey Mouse jumping around on your furniture? Because the mixed reality idea is you can kind of see what you can still see reality while you have the headset on, but there's an overlay of content that could, it felt like a silly application to my mind. And the $3,500 price point suggests to me this is an experiment, not something they expect to have a mass following. What's your take here?
Yeah, the change between immersed reality and mixed reality. So the mixed reality you talk about is basically you're just sliding between the two. So either you're totally immersed or you have it augmented from the reality that you are whatever room or where you find yourself. So it's so if we start with the market's interpretation, was initially, as we pointed out, the quick take, excitement, and then it was faded. I think they ended slightly lower, actually. So the market really shrugged off the presentation of this Vision Pro. Disney, which is one of the big partners in the early phase of this product with their Disney Plus offering, which will be available inside the Vision Pro headset, I think also fell a little bit in the aftermarket trading. So this is a market where investors have really difficulties pricing and valuing what is the value for Apple of this product introduction. They call it a new era of spatial computing, and that's potentially a new category. So but the market is not really clear about whether it will be big. But I think one of the reasons is that, as you pointed out, the price tag is pretty high given the macro backdrop and the inflation that we have. It's not a price point that is for a mass consumer market. If this is typical Apple product, they will set their growth margin around somewhere between 40 and 50%. So the production cost of this headset is probably close to around $1,700 or $2,000 for this headset. So this is an expensive technological device for the ordinary consumer. If we step back a little bit from the market's interpretation and just the people that actually got the product introductions and could get tests of this product said that it's comfortable to have this headset on their head. It felt very much Apple-like. There are some very sleek features. It was a pretty spectacular experience, to say the least. So the product reviews so far, and a lot of the people that are in this industry already, so the largest market shareholder in the augmented reality industry is Meta with their headsets. After they bought the Oculus and they built out the franchise over time, but it never really took off, and they bet on their metaverse. So you have those, you have something, you have other players as well. And the gist is from the industry players that Apple in one shot just overtook all the other players in this industry. This product is by far the best well executed, has the best features, et cetera. So some are arguing actually that the price point is set correctly. It's just not a price point for the mass market. So let's see what it brings of value for Apple as this settles. Talking about technology as well, John, I'm highlighting two other things. So one of them is is semiconductor stocks. The semiconductor industry, as we just talked about in this podcast, it's really been driving this market higher. There are two risks to semiconductors here in the short term, I think. So one is that TSMC, the big Taiwanese semiconductor foundry, they're lowering their outlook and CapEx down to $32 billion from a previous range of 32 to 36. So they're lowering it to that lower end of that range. And they're saying some customers are actually lowering their inventory. So we're seeing another sign. I talked about it recently in the chemicals industry, but now also in semiconductors. We are moving back somewhat to just in time, very lean inventories. It's a way for companies to cut the capital that is absorbed in these inventories. And obviously, it begs the question: well, there is a more profound slowdown in the overall semiconductor industry. And then more hawkish commentaries from the ECB. The pricing pressures are quite strong here in Europe. Higher rates, etc. We also had the RBA. Surely semiconductors is a high duration part of the equity market. So there is a higher sensitivity to, unexpected interest rate hikes. So that's something to have in mind as well. And then Rheinmetall, very final news there. They got a pretty big three-digit million euro order for different types of valves that are used for different heavy and medium duty domain applications. I suspect that has something to do with a combination of either artillery and vehicles. So it just underscores that there is a huge demand still for this industry. And John, the final one on the earnings watch, two stocks really only to watch this week, Inditex tomorrow and then NIO, the EV, the Chinese EV maker on Friday. I've highlighted Inditex here on the little insert of the quarterly financials that you can see here. Revenue growth is expected to be 12% for the year. Also expanding operating income. They have had a pretty good start to the year, the Spanish fast fashion retailer. But as you can see from the analyst estimates, the expectation is that revenue growth will go down and to a lower gear in the coming quarters as Europe is coming through this patch of very high inflation and weaker consumer sentiment recently.
I was just thinking about Apple, Peter, because being one myself suffering from low hearing, obviously Apple spent the last few decades selling headsets to young people in the process. Many have ruined their hearing. We'll have an increased problem with hearing in the coming years, not only hitting older people, but also young. And right now, from the surveys basically show from the time you realize you need some kind of hearing support, it takes up to 10 years before you're actually ready to buy a pair because it's the stigma of having to use hearing aids. So reverse engineer the AirPods and make them into hearing aids. Then they can basically help solve an issue they helped create over the past couple of decades. That I think that could be a major earner.
Okay. Yeah, just a short comment there. Not because this should be about Apple. There have been rumors and whispers for many years that Apple is looking at this, but the hearing aid device business is still, there's a little bit of over-the-counter market in the US. You don't have that same market here in Europe. And I think it is a market they're really looking at. And I think that would be a much more concrete low-hanging fruit for Apple than trying to create this new category. But on the other hand, it's a very large company. They do have to create, or they must create, new categories of a very certain size to really move the share price at this point. And I think that's the issue for Apple going forward.
All right, let's go to the macro calendar where there's very little to talk about, but we do have as a follow-up on that RBA decision, Australia's RBA Governor Lowe out speaking and the Q1 GDP. It's pretty stale given that we're about to end Q2 here. The latest weekly crude data from the U.S., crude oil and fuel inventories, and some Canadian data. Interesting on that front, if you look at that Wednesday, so tomorrow, Bank of Canada meeting, where the expectations are sort of 50-50 for them to hike in at some point in June or July. Sorry, they're this price that they will hike, but it's not sure, the market's not sure whether it'll happen tomorrow or at the July meeting. And if you look at the rate spread between the U.S. and Canada, it's actually getting to local lows here. One of the reasons why the Canadian dollar is quite strong, and we have the spread, the two-year spread, at least the swaps, down at minus 27. So the Fed expected to peak out and to be cutting more than the Bank of Canada if you look out to the next cycle here. And then we have some other small bits and pieces through the end of the week, but it's a pretty quiet week, to say the least, on the data front. I think it's more about this liquidity issue, and we'll have Altea on tomorrow just to talk about that, as it will be an interesting to see how much this market can absorb this without too many ripples through the system. I mean, one way that surely there is demand for these, at least on the short end of the curve, if you look at what's happening in the U.S. banking system, as depositors are leaving banks and happy to buy money markets and to buy short-term treasuries. So that is one source of demand for this torrent of issuance that is coming from the treasury. But we'll quantify that tomorrow. For now, stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.